Members, we'll bring the meeting to order. Why don't we first approve yesterday's minutes? Representative Anderson, would you be willing to move the minutes?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Members, two things on the agenda today. Three things. We have Representative Fabian's bill. I think that'll take the better part of our meeting today, or at least a little over half of it. Then we'll finish going through the DNR's policy bill. And then we are going to do Representative Wagenius's bill for informational purposes today, and with the possibility of it being incorporated into something else going forward. And this is the third time it's been on the agenda, Representative Wagenius, so we believe in the three-strike rule, so you will get through today no matter what. Yes, so we're not going to make people come back four times. Welcome, Representative Fabian and Mr. Fullis. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. The A5 amendment you have before, I'd like to move that to get the bill in shape of the way.
You know what, Representative Fabian, we have not moved your bill, so if you want to move your bill to bring it before the committee formally, that would be good.
I would like to move House File 2095 at this time, sir.
And it's being recommended to pass and go to Commerce? Jobs. I'm sorry. And Representative Fabian would like to move the A5 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Discussion to the A5. Excuse me, something else. Oh, we got to get in order here.
I'm sorry.
Staff is getting us straightened out. Representative Fabian, you need to move the DE2 amendment.
Yeah.
Discussion to begin to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the DE2 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, we've adopted the DE2. Representative Fabian, your next motion is?
I'd like to move the A5 amendment to get the bill in the shape.
We're getting better here. To the A5, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, you've now got the DE2 and the A5 on the bill. Representative Fabian, to the amended bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the A5 amendment, I'd actually like to ask Ms. Taylor to kind of go through some of the technicalities in that amendment. And if there's questions, we'll certainly deal with those.
Good morning, Ms. Taylor. If you could walk through the amendments, what we've just done.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, I'll go through the A5. It's largely a technical amendment, but there are a few small changes. Lines 1.3 and 1.8, as I understand it, substantially completed as far as when it refers to the application being submitted. This was intended to be deleted all along, as I understand it. Lines 1.4 and 1.9, just they sort of tighten up some language regarding applicable rules and statutes. 1.11, I think in response to the agency's concern that there was no requirement for them to submit any information when using a permit applicant, professionalist requires some information to be submitted. Line 1.14 is just clearly technical. 1.15, this is clarifying when there's in the case of a shutdown, that just provides some additional language there. 1.17 is technical, and then 1.18 through 2.14, the original definitions were coded so they would apply it to the entire chapter 116J. This tightens it up so it only applies to that new section. And then line 2.15, in response to the agency suggesting that reviewing EAWs and EIS categories should be done more frequently, this would require that done every 5 years after the initial one.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to point out that this amendment obviously reflects some work with the agency to address some of their concerns. And as the bill moves forward, we're willing to do that as things proceed.
Any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian and Mr. Quillis, I was thinking last night, going over the bill, that you know, last year House File 1 got a lot of great reviews. It was a blockbuster. Everybody was in agreement on it, pretty much. Some of us weren't, but you know, for the last year, you've had a lot of positive response to that. I think the agencies tried to react, but Mr. Chair, members, you know, the sequel is never as good as the original. You know, for every Godfather Part 2, there's Jaws 2 or Jaws 3D. And I really think we're in that category here with the bill. I wish we would take the time to let what happened last year work through. I wish we'd take the time to go back and go through the legislative auditor's report that made some recommendations about improving the process. And I think what we're doing here is reaching again. And maybe, Mr. Quillis, this one's going straight to video, bypassing the theaters, trying to replicate where we were at before. So I think we need time to look at what's worked with the work that was done last year that was pretty bipartisan. And I think we'll try some amendments today to maybe make this a little better. I'm not confident that they'll, that editing will work. But I understand what you're doing, but I'm not sure this is needed right now.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I will take one exception. I can think Home Alone 2 was better than Home Alone 1, so, okay. You know, I appreciate that sentiment, but again, I think that it's important to have the discussion. I'm willing to work with people to try to make the bill better, willing to work with the agency, willing to work with you. I talked to Representative Wagenius just before we sat down here and expressed some concerns about her amendment. And, you know, this is a work in progress, you might say, as we move through the different committees. And if there are specific concerns that you have, you know, let's have that discussion.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, are you ready for amendments? Or
I'm not quite Representative Hansen. Additional questions? Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. And on line 3, the permit application professional, I have some concerns about this. These people, you know, they have a professional engineer license, which is, I think, useful, and at least 10 years of experience. But then they have a whole bunch of powers, and would like some clarification on that. 10 years of experience, is it working on small projects for a firm? Is it only in one area? I mean, permits could cover water, air, ground, different discharges. Who's to say that what that 10 years of experience is? It seems like you're letting someone who could claim to have worked for 10 years and has a professional engineering license to have a lot of power in what we allow to go out into our environment. And so I think, what assurances do we have that this person will actually have the experience they say they will, have the interests of the state in mind, be good people for the businesses to work with, frankly, and won't mess up a business's application? There just seems to be almost no certainty that this new permit application professional would have any real quality assurance for either the businesses or the people of Minnesota.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Knuth, my vision is that, number one, I don't know too many proposers who are interested in having someone who is not qualified, who does not have the background and does not have the knowledge to put these things together. You know, I think that what brings these types of bills forward is the fact that people want speed, they want efficiency, but we want it done well. We want to protect the environment, and I believe that a proposer, whether it's a county or it's a business or so forth, wants the very best people with good qualifications, someone that can sit down with them, and say, I can do this for you, and I have a track record, I have experience, and the marketplace is going to, I'll say, flush out the bad ones, if there are any. I'm confident that most of these projects that require this highly technical assistance to put these things together, it's going to demand that these people are qualified and they do know what they are doing and they can put together a good application. Mr. Phillips?
Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen, you want to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would move to delete Section 2.
Representative Hansen has moved to delete Section 2. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I would not accept that amendment.
Further discussion? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, the reason this is the provision that accepts that we'll keep having shutdowns kind of takes the view that they're inevitable. I know that there are other bills and amendments like this going on in other bills, but I don't think we should accept that shutdowns are inevitable. I think there should be an effort to try to avoid shutdowns and not put put the government on autopilot so that a shutdown becomes a routine thing. I think this is really, if you're trying to change the permitting, it's a little different than changing the permitting. It is making sure that we're going to just continue to have shutdowns. We accept that fact and that we're going to issue permits whether that happens or not.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, of course, agree with Representative Hansen and his argument, but I would like to add one. The way this is written, when it says existing permits shall not be terminated or suspended, that is a forever thing. So if you happen to be in that lucky area, that 20 days or 30 days of government shutdown, and your permit's due, then too bad. It's forever. It will not be terminated or suspended. So not only is it a bad idea, this is written either poorly in a way that you didn't intend, or your intention is that if there is a government shutdown, existing permits shall not be terminated or suspended forever.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tony Quillis again from the Director, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Director of Environmental Policy. Representative Wagenius, I think Mr. Smith from the Pollution Control Agency yesterday testified that his concerns were a little bit on how some of the federal permits that might expire in this interruption of government services area. Let's hope that it never happens again. But if it does, you must abide by all the terms and conditions of the local, state, and federal law and rules. And there was also in the amendment that also states that you must continue to receive, review, process fees, reports, other filings. So you have to abide by all the rules and stipulations of the permit that you have, whether they're federal, state, or local. It's just that you may be able to continue to operate your facility and in some cases keep hundreds of union jobs going during an interruption of government services.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I hear what you're saying. Your words say something different. That's all I'm saying. And then that, for that reason alone, I am supporting Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Representative Qualms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have house, homeowner's insurance. I really don't expect my house to burn down, but it might happen. And I see this as being, you know, similar. It's insurance. And I do know at times during the shutdown, it seemed like forever, and it seemed to drag on. But the, you know, historically longest shutdown we just had is not an egregious, you know, it wasn't 6 months, it wasn't a year, 2 years. So forever, I think, is a slight exaggeration of the point. And I, well, I don't think a shutdown is going to last forever. And I think we're just trying to have some insurance because lot of people did not agree with the determination that shut down many things that we felt really didn't need to be shut down and hurt people that didn't need to be hurt. So I'm fine with buying insurance for my home, and I'm also fine with what is trying to be done here in this section is have some insurance should there be a short shutdown to where we don't disrupt and break things and cause undue harm.
Representative Lagenius. Representative Hansen, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say I'm going to support the Hansen Amendment only because I think that the wordsmithing needs to be improved, and with improved wordsmithing, I would support the part in the bill. But it would also improve that section, too, a lot if you included beer, because I heard more about having beer disruption than I did permit disruption during the state government shutdown. That might improve it, consider that, Mr. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
And fishing licenses too, right, Representative Deal?
Be fine.
Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard? Dill?
Yes.
Draskowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk? Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hilty?
Aye.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
Yes.
Scott?
Scott, yeah, what do I do? No. No.
Torkelson?
No.
Lagenius?
Yes.
Blake?
Aye.
Falk?
Aye.
Got 6 ayes and 10 nays. Yeah, I've got 7 ayes, 9 nays. The motion does not prevail. We got a couple different numbers here, but 2 out of 3 says it's 7. Okay, we got it corrected. Sorry for the confusion. Further discussion to the bill. Additional amendments. Representative Lagenius. Yep, well, Representative Lagenius, if you think I keep track of things, you should know by now. Sorry, no, I'm kidding. Yes, Representative Lagenius, do your amendment.
Yes, I think I even submitted it on time, Mr. Chair.
We would let you do it even if it was a couple minutes late.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, one of the things that we all have to think about is for this new person, this permit applicant professional who is going to be hired by someone to do this work and not the PCA, there's always going to be the question of conflict of interest. And so what I am doing in this amendment to work on that issue of conflict of interest, I'm not sure it solves it, but it certainly works on it. One of the ways that we we can't prevent it. I'm not going to say that this totally resolves the conflict of interest problem. But I will tell you that the professionals at the Pollution Control Agency, by rule, have what's called a duty of candor. So what I have done is ask for the language from the duty of candor that already exists in law and governs the professionals at the PCA. I am applying that to this new group who want to be professional and certainly don't want the appearance of conflict of interest. even though I think it's going to be very difficult not to have that. But this is goes a long way to solving that. And this is taking the same language that applies to all the professionals at PCA and applying it to this permit application, applicant professional. That's all it does. And I'd like to move the amendment and ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, excuse me. You know, as I discussed with you earlier, we're willing to work with you on some language. I think that the language that you're proposing is, I'll say, too broad. It may involve a professional going home having a discussion with their wife or their son or something like that. I when all of those conversations become something that is going to be used later on in some sort of legal action or something, I think that that is too broad. So I would ask a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I would point out that this doesn't talk about what you say at home. It says in all formal or informal negotiations, communications, and proceedings, and any other dealings between any person and a permit application professional. This is having to do with folks who are actually working on this. And I don't think you can read it any other way.
Additional discussion to the amendment. Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would support the amendment. It seems like if we're going to give these unlicensed, unregulated people the kind of power to help determine what pollution we can put out into our environment, that we should expect them to at least meet the standards of our own state agency employees. And so I would hope that Representative Fabian would reconsider his support of this amendment. It's as you know, Representative Wagenius said, it's the same exact language that we require of our current pollution control agency staff. And permits, they're important for businesses to do business, but the reason we have permits isn't just to create hoops. It's to make sure that we're not putting pollution out into the environment that can hurt people. I live in a district where we still have the legacy of what can happen when you don't have permits. I have people several times a year talk to me about the impact of the solvents and the plume from the Twin Cities Army Ammunition Plant. And there's reasons that plant was built. There's reasons why they did what they did. But I wish for the people of my district that they wouldn't have to have a special water treatment plant and they wouldn't have to have the concerns that maybe their cancer was from the place that they live. And so I think our permit applicant professionals, if we make these new people, should at a minimum be held to the standard that our own state agency professionals are, because permits aren't just about the business. They're important for the business, but they're about the people of Minnesota. They're about the health and safety of the people of Minnesota. And if we don't hold them to some sort of standard, and I think at least at a minimum the same standard as our agency professionals, then we're doing a disservice to the people of our state.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Quillen,
members of the committee, Representative Wagenius and Representative Knuth, correct? I want this permit application professional to be held to the exact same standards of the pollution control agency employee. But if I read this language correctly, in the way my simple mind reads it, is in any informal negotiations with any person, it is a duty of each person. So informal negotiations in any dealings with any person, I interpret that as a permit application professional to go home and have a conversation with his wife and have to have the same candor that I'd have in a conversation with a PCA employee. So I understand where you want to go, and I want that permit application professional to have these standards. But I think we need to narrow it down to maybe any permit application professional actively engaged in an action under 116.3 subdivision 2B paragraph E and PCA employee shall act in the duty of candor. I interpret it as any conversations at all between any person and a permit application professional to just be as wide open. It could be with his neighbor over the fence. So that's how I interpret it. I agree exactly where you want, where you're going, and what we, how we want the standards. This permit application professional, we want them too. But I think we just need to narrow the focus a little bit of the amendment.
Representative Wagenius, comment to that point.
Mr. Chair, I had the amendment in, and I haven't seen any amendments to my amendments, and I believe we need to proceed because it says this is in any formal or informal negotiations, communications, and proceedings and dealings. This is okay. I think the language is clear.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, to that point, Mr. Quillis, and I think the point that you're trying to make on formal and informal negotiations, and you're going to, you know, implying or stating that we're going to take these things home and have a, we all take things home. I certainly do in my personal life. I don't go home and negotiate with my wife over this. I mean, come on. Give me a break. That's not what's going to happen. You know it. This is pretty specific language. It talks about the proceedings. If there's some way to amend this and make it a little bit better, let's do it. But this isn't an onerous. This isn't a burden here. We want these professionals to be professionals. But this isn't. I just have to take issue with it. And I, Representative Fabian, you said the same thing. We're going to take this home and, you know, talk to your kid or your wife or your spouse, whatever. I think that's a stretch. Yeah, going to talk. You're going to negotiate. This is pretty good language.
Representative Purcell, if I didn't have the opportunity to go home and spill my guts to my wife about some things that happened here, I don't know how I would be able to do it. And unfortunately, you only get to do that a couple days a week. So she doesn't get into the interest level that I have, but I do need to have those discussions with her, and I hope you're able to do that too. Otherwise, this place would drive us nuts. Representative Purcell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And you know what? Take this in the vein in which we're speaking. And you betcha. And all of us had a good conversation with our significant others yesterday. I presume. I hope everybody did. But by golly, I don't take a permit application, and I've been involved in a few, and go home and negotiate that with my significant other. Come on now. That's not what happens.
Some permits we would negotiate with them. If it was about like a permit to do some hunting or buy some hunting land, we may have to get their approval. Representative Wagenius and Representative Knut, I think it's really important that you want to have the private sector treated like the MPCA. That's the crux of this bill, a very important section. Representative Fabian, I would strongly encourage you to work with Representative Wagenius and see if she does have some connection in the corner office that we currently don't have, and so we need to work together to actually see this. Home Alone 2 was better than Home Alone. I thought Rocky 2 might have been better, too. I can't remember for sure. But anyway, to the amendment. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard? Dill?
Yes.
Drazkowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
Nine.
Scott?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Beard?
Nay.
The amendment fails. seven ayes and 10 nays. To the bill. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I have a question that may or may not result in an amendment. I'm looking on page 2, section 3, the permit duration, subdivision 8B, and the definition of state disposal system permits. And I was looking in the statute where you're amending that, and related to feedlots, I can't, under definitions, I can find a disposal system under 115.01. Disposal system means a system for disposing of sewage, industrial waste, and other wastes, and including sewer system and treatment works. And then when I go to 8A, which is the specific subdivision that you're following, it talks about agency permits for above-ground storage facilities are issued for a term of up to 10 years. So what I'm wondering here on this section of your bill is, are you looking to have the animal feedlot provision be similar to the wastewater treatment system requirements, where wastewater treatment requirements that those of us in the metro area, the requirements for cleaning up the water and making it suitable to go back into the public waters. Is that what you're looking at?
Representative Fabian, or if we have additional testifiers, if you could identify yourself with the record and who you represent. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I'd like to defer to Jerry here.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Park Producers Association. And, what this is about is that...
Mr. Schoenfeld, could you speak into the mic? Thank you.
I apologize. yes, Mr. Chairman. What this is about is that a year ago, or a little over a year ago, there was a federal court decision that came down. For many years in Minnesota, we had an NPDS, a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, / SDS, which was a state disposal system permit. And they were given jointly for many years. There was a federal court decision, actually a second federal court decision, there had been two of them, that said that unless there was a discharge, that a feedlot was not required to get an NPDS. And because of that, last year we had requested that they be that the NPDS requirement be eliminated, but we did not ask to go unpermitted. That was not what we were seeking. We were simply making the differentiation, since we were not discharging, and the federal courts had said that if we didn't discharge, we didn't need the NPDS. That we would still, we still felt that we should be permitted, but that not under the NPDS. And as I said, the original permit was an NPDS / SDS permit. And that goes back historically for about 15 years. So the MPCA has started to look into rulemaking, and there still is, I'm sitting here, but I can tell you that others in the livestock industry, aside from myself, have different ideas about this. But from our position, at least, we have not sought to go unpermitted. And so the PCA has basically taken a look and said, we're going to start redrafting some rules for the SDS. And when we looked at that, when a operation changes, so that there is any change in the operation, we recognize that we would have to go back and get the SDS permit renewed. But what we were looking at here is to say, if a permit is put in place and we're following the 70-20 rules, which are the feedlot rules, and a permit is put in place, that it be extended from 5 to 10 years, really from an efficiency standpoint, from two different places. Because it is no longer controlled by the NPDS, it would allow for county feedlot officers, if the state delegated it to them, to become involved in these permits, similar to what they have for under 1,000 animal units. first county delegation. So that's one place that it could play a part of a role. Secondly, and so to work more closely at the county level, potentially, that decision has not been made by the state and it has not been delegated, but it could be. Secondly, basically, if nothing changes in the operation and they're following the rules and there's no complaints, it's simply a cost and efficiency matter. It saves staff time from the MPDCA, and it saves time and money from the farmer's standpoint. So that's really what this is all about. And it's not to go unpermitted or to...
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, was this section in your original bill, or is this just appearing now in the delete all?
Representative Fabian. Mr. Quillis.
I believe it was. It was in the delete all.
Representative Fabian, if you could speak into the mic.
It's not in the original bill, no. It was in the delete all.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Mr. Schoenfeld, you describing what's going on. I think I heard you say the Pollution Control Agency was going to be looking at rules or trying to react to the change in the court ruling. But here we have a complicated issue that is appearing in a delete all to move on, and I move to delete Section 3, and I ask for a roll call vote.
Representative Hanson moves to delete Section 3 and ask for a roll call. Representative Anderson, was your question to this point, or is it unrelated? I had you on the list. You're not on the list anymore? Okay, sorry. Representative Wagenius, did you want to speak to this? You're on the list. Discussion to the Hanson Amendment, or to the motion. Representative Fabian, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask a no vote on the amendment, please.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Over the years, we've spent a lot of time on feedlot issues, and I think last year we spent a great deal of time on the NPDES issue. I think this question and anything related to it should be introduced as a bill, and so it's out there for people to see, and we can get a full vetting of the potential consequences of this. Mr. Schoenfeld mentioned that there is disagreement. I don't know what that disagreement is. I don't know what... how far the PCA is into rule here, and here we have a DE. So I just think, again, I mentioned at the beginning of this that we're pushing through a sequel here, kind of a wish list of what folks want, and I think we can have some unintended consequences, and this section should be removed.
Thank you. Anybody in the audience wants to speak for or against the amendment? Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the amendment? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would just ask where this bill is going after it would leave this committee.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, you're going to jobs.
Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard?
Nay.
Dill?
No.
Druskowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Volk?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hanson?
Yes.
Hilty?
Aye.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
No.
Scott?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 6 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Additional discussion to the bill. Representative Wagenius.
To the bill, just one question first, and I'd like to make a comment on the bill. But the question is, there is there's fiscal impact of this bill, and I don't know, and I guess my question is it going to come back after all the iterations? So we can deal with the fiscal impact, so we are going to cut whatever needs to be cut if this is to be enacted. So would it come back here to do that, or are you going to leave that to Finance Committee?
Representative Wagenius, we're going to follow the tradition of former Chairman Solberg and current Chair Holberg, that their policy about fiscal notes and how they're dealt with. So it will not come back here. My understanding is, in my discussions with MPCA yesterday, was they're continuing to work. The bill is substantially different than its original form, which the original fiscal note was for. And so we're going to let the bill move forward through the process. And Representative Fabian is in touch with the agency and Mr. Kennedy, the staff of the Ways and Means Committee, and will follow tradition in that respect. Representative Wagenius.
And so I take it that this committee will not make the decision, rather leaving it to finance where the cuts are going to be made if there is a fiscal note for this bill. I mean, that's if that's where we're going to go, that's where we can go. I just wanted it on the record. But the other thing here I want to talk about is this, what we really end up here with this permit applicant professional is obviously, just like in any business, is beholden to the person that hires them. And that person writes an application, essentially writes a permit, and on line 4.10, that permit is deemed complete and approved. The public has not had an opportunity to weigh in. So what the outcome of this bill is we are taking property rights away from citizens near any facility, and we're giving those property rights to a particular business owner. And for those folks who are concerned about property rights, and I am, I think this is way overdone. So I have a well, and I'm next to a industry that has decided to expand, and I'm on the same aquifer as that industry. And it's that industry's permit application professional writes up a permit that says I can take a certain amount of water per year out of that aquifer, and the neighbor has no say. None. So if the neighbor's well goes dry, too bad, neighbor. You have to build a new well. Or if that permit applicant professional says that we're only going to increase fine particulate matter out of this facility by a certain amount, and there is a school within a couple blocks, the asthma rates may go up in that school, and those parents have no say because the permit applicant professional has made the decision, that permit application professional who has been hired by the industry makes the permit that is deemed complete and approved. Members, we should not be voting on this bill. It is not well written. And for somebody to come in and say it won't change air and water is ridiculous. This is a major grab of property rights for Minnesota citizens and giving those property rights to a certain select few. It's wrong.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, well, first of all, in the bill, in the area that you cite on 4.12, it talks about following and complying with all of the statutes and rules. On 4.15, it also talks about being subject to all public comment periods and public hearings. The use of this permit professional is an option. It's not something that has to be done. It's something that's available to the proposers. And in the end, the Pollution Control Agency still is the one that issues the permit. And final approval has to come from MPCA.
Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And keep harping on the permit applicant professional because I think it's the crux of this bill. And, you know, I think I get fairly emotional about this because I do live in a place that has a real legacy of pollution. You know, my city sued the Department of the Army and won. That doesn't happen very often. They have to really screw up for, you know, a city of 20,000 people to sue the Army and win. And the Army pays for our water treatment plant and will for decades. And so the question I have is with this permit applicant professional, and they have to be a licensed engineer, great. They have to have 10 years of experience. That sounds good, but I don't think we don't have any documentation of what sort of experience they have or who says that what experience counts as 10 years of experience. And we, you know, voted down the amendment that said that they had to be held to the same standard of a pollution control agency employee. So I've been mulling over your response that the market would figure this out, because that makes me a little nervous, because my duty as a legislator is to the people of Minnesota and making sure that they can live in a safe, healthy place. And that's why we have permits. And we can fight about how they work, and, you know, we can fight about how they're too slow, but I think we all agree that the reason they're there is so we live in a safe and healthy place. And I expect the state agency, who's paid by Minnesotans and working on behalf of Minnesotans, to have the health and safety of our state as their number one priority. I'm not so sure about someone who's hired by an industry having that same standard, the health and safety of Minnesotans. Is there the question is simply, I think, short, is the permit applicant professional's highest duty to the health and safety of the people of Minnesota, or to making sure that whatever business hired them doesn't get sued, even if they can figure out a way that they can get around the permit, or if they screw up in some way? I mean, it's a different standard of duty. It's a different responsibility. And I don't see any language in this bill that makes sure that the standard of duty is to the people of Minnesota, not to whatever industry hired them, who's, you know, they're Minnesotans, so yeah, they do probably have some concern about their fellow citizens, but you know, we've all seen Aaron Brockovich. We've all seen the stories of pollution gone wrong, of corporations doing the wrong thing. They don't function in the same way we do as individuals. So I need assurance, and I don't see it, that there's assurance that this permit applicant professional's standard of duty is to the people of Minnesota and their health and safety, and not to whoever hired them not getting sued and getting messed up over this permit application. And I'd be interested in your comments about how those two duties interact and potentially conflict or don't conflict in your view.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, well, first of all, let me say that I'm as concerned about the environment. Maybe not as you, and I'm not going to, you know, sometimes I'm just as concerned as you are. We can debate that at length. The fact of the matter is I raised my children in Minnesota. My grandchildren spend time here. Back home in Rosa, where I live, we appreciate clean air, clean water, and we hold very high standards for that. And throughout Northwest Minnesota, the people that I represent, I also represent cities that at some point are going to have to do work on their sewage treatment plants and technical stuff. They need people available to them if they choose to do this that can put these permits together. High quality applications, I think, is absolutely essential, and I agree with you totally that these things need to be done according to the law, and we need to preserve our clean water, our clean air, and our clean land. The bottom line for me is that you can go through all of this application process, and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency still controls whether or not your permit is granted. And I have great confidence in Commissioner Austin and his staff, Mr. Smith and so forth, to be able to go through these applications and make sure that they are in the best interest of Minnesotans.
Representative Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Representative Fabian, I have a question about the first section of the bill. So if I'm a permit applicant and I bring in an incomplete application and the Commissioner of Natural Resources has to go and do a lot more work to tell me exactly, I think the word is enumerate, every instance that I am deficient in that permit, who pays for that? Is that a cost that's recoverable by the agency, or is that being paid for out of general fund dollars?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Quillen,
Representative Falk, that's a great question. I'm going to assume that's part of the permit application fee, but I'm appealing to
let's ask Smith. Let's ask Mr. Smith to come down and see if he can elaborate on Representative Falk's question. I'm not sure, Mr. Smith, did you follow the line of questioning, or do you want it repeated? If you could identify yourself for the record.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jeff Smith, I'm the director of the Industrial Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The question was about how we review applications and how that's funded. And most of our funding comes from a few sources. It's primarily environmental fund funded. We also get a lot of our funding through the federal government that supports our permitting activities. It is not a direct function of the application or the review of applications themselves. So we get application fees, but our review of those applications are not directly tied to the quantity of time that we spend looking at applications, and we are not billing back out based on the quantity of time that we do application review.
Representative Paul. Mr. Smith, could you walk through what would happen if, under Representative Falk's scenario, that someone submitted a permit application that was clearly unqualified to be before you and was missing numerous spots on the form and was incomplete, and very simple review of it would see that it was not proper? What would be the process? Would you what would you do under that scenario?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a great question, and one that we've struggled mightily with over the last year since the passage of permanent efficiency law. It was the one spot, as you might recall, from the law that was passed last March that was going to be the most challenging for us, because there was no differentiation between the kinds of permits that we were obligated to review. With 3,000 to 5,000 applications every year and 15,000 to 18,000 permits, our concern was that we didn't have the resources to do the detailed application review as is required by the permitting efficiency law. However, we have spent the last year beefing up those systems. And by beefing up, I mean to say that we have gone through our permit application processes, our guidance and our assistance mechanisms on the website, so that we can encourage project proposers and their consultants, if they're using them, to submit to us the best applications possible. Right now, as an application comes in, we look for basic administrative completeness, and by that I mean, were the forms signed, were the proper were all the forms included, and was the application fee also included? That's the first hurdle we have to get over. If you do not do those, basically those three things, your application is sent back as incomplete. If you get, when you get to the next level, that is where the detailed review of the application begins. And this is also the place where we have the most concern about the future. As applications come in, I have to pull off staff that are writing, it's the same staff that write permits that do the review. I have to pull off staff that are doing permit writing on behalf of some other facility, and their obligation, because we've got 30 days to do the review, their obligation is to pick that application up, do the review, and give you detailed feedback on why it's incomplete. I think the biggest challenge with this provision, but let me pause there and say, we've got a process now I think works for everybody, as long as applicants are providing great information up front. The problem that I'm seeing with this new language is, not only is the application coming in, but we're also getting a draft permit. The problem is that a permit professional, if they're using a permit professional, may spend months and years drafting this permit, because some of these permits, as all of us know, are many hundreds of pages long. They may spend months and years drafting the permit, and as it comes to the agency, we only get 30 days to review it for completeness on both the application and the permit side. Again, I'll be pulling staff away from working on somebody else's permit to have to do this review. And I'm doubtful that we can do it within 30 days given the resources we have today. That's my biggest concern about this particular provision in this law.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a question for you. I was a finance major in college. I wasn't an English major, but I did a fair amount of copy editing. And if I remember correctly, you asked Mr. Smith about the current process, but when I read this language here, it states, the new language is, whether the application is complete or incomplete. If the commissioner determines that an application is incomplete, the notice to the applicant must enumerate all deficiencies. It makes no distinction about the level of incompleteness. And so your comment about, well, you would send it back if it were clearly just a sheet of paper that says, you know, permit for A or B or whatever, there's no distinction here. And so in essence, if I submitted this piece of paper saying I want a permit to permit a mine, an industrial facility, a feedlot, anything, that agency is going to have to go through and enumerate all deficiencies. And so I think we need to go and think very clearly about this, about if we should have some distinction as to what qualifies as an incomplete or not fully, we'll just say it's not a good permit application, because there's a huge range of deficiencies between what is there and what is not there.
Representative Falk, English was the one thing that I struggled the most through college. I did fine with numbers. I'm okay with numbers, but English was a challenge. That was my older sister that was the English major and school teacher in that regard. Mr. Smith, I think we're a little naive if we don't think that the private sector can help us here. The MPCA has made good strides so far. We appreciate that work. You got more work in front of you yet to go. We continue to hear from folks out around Minnesota that our permitting process is cumbersome to them. It's frustrating. It moves unbelievably slow. They go to other states. The large producer that's going to build the facility on just across the border in South Dakota, because he just can't handle our permitting process, are frustrating for us to hear. We want to work together. I hear both sides of the aisle talking about the need to hold the private sector to the same level as the public sector. I think that's good. For us to be naive and think today that only somebody that works for MPCA can do something, and then if they work for a private engineering firm or a consultant, they don't have the ability. I'm sorry, that's not true today. That's not the case. We're going to continue to do this. If someone puts an application before you and it's derelict of the Representative Falk talked about, I certainly think a phone call back to them and say, you know what, are you okay if I send that back to you in the mail? Because it's really deficient. I've spent 5 minutes looking at it. It's actually embarrassing. You work for so-and-so, a professional firm. This is really bad. you don't want me to write my report. I would hope that's what you would do instead of spend a whole bunch of state money doing their work. That's not what this intention is. Representative Wiginius, or do you have additional comments, Representative Polk? We can talk about my college career more.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I was a finance major. I was not an English major, but I think you just made my point, too, because this language says that they have to do that enumeration of all deficiencies. I mean, if we want to give them the flexibility to make the calls or to open this up to make it so they have some ability to send back these highly deficient permits or the ones that are just clearly incomplete, I think then we should do that because you've alluded to the fact that you're hoping the agency could do that, but this language says that you cannot. It says that they must enumerate all deficiencies. So I think that's the issue, and it's been clearly identified here. So let's try to figure this out.
I think Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk hit it right on the hammer, the nail on the head. What you just described was our old process, a process by which we were quickly identifying those permits, those projects that were the most technical, the most controversial, and needed our attention right away. And by attention, I mean we would contact the project proposer and the consultants, and we'd say, don't submit an application. Instead, come on in and let's talk about what you want to do. Let's understand your time frames, and we can work out a plan together. The challenge of this law, the permanent efficiency law, has been there was no discretion left to the agency. We were required to review every application for completeness, not portions of completeness, not good enough that we can continue. We had to report back on every level of deficiency. That has been a challenge to us. I believe it is our job to tell project proposers and their consultants when applications are complete. It just would have been nice to have a little more discretion to pick and choose those projects that we know, based on our experience of the places where we can, by linking early on with project proposers, have some positive effects on overall time frames and getting permits issued appropriately.
Additional Representative Wiginius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we have problems on both ends. Representative Falk brings up the incomplete, but then we hear about the permit application that has taken several years because it's perhaps a mining permit that's taken several years to draft, and that is going to be deemed complete and approved, and the agency does not have the time or the resource to go over it to see if it's okay. And here it's been drafted by somebody who has been hired. And you know what? I do think there are professionals out there that could do this work. But their duty is to the person that pays them. And that's the bill that we have before us. So one of the options will be, under the way this is drafted, is for the PCA to say, we don't have time to go through all of this, reject it, and then it ends up in court. I mean, some of these bills that we're seeing lately seem to be drafted by out-of-work attorneys. But I am so concerned about this bill, I am going to ask for a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Wiginius. Any additional new comments? Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know, I'm sorry I've asked so many questions, but this is a pretty significant change. And I'm looking at line 4.9 to 4.16 because I think it's kind of the crux of the issue, other than the permit applicant professional not having any sort of license or any, you know, other than a basic engineering, professional engineering license. So I'm not, I think Representative Fabian, if you could answer this question, and maybe Mr. Smith could give us some insight of how it works now. So the permit application comes in, filled by this permit applicant professional, and the commissioner has 30 days to review it and say that it's complete and that a draft permit is approved. And then there's a public comment hearing, public comment periods and public hearings, or they could deny the permit. That's the simple thing. They just deny it. That's I think we can all understand that. But how does the permit process work now? Do those public comments and public hearings happen before the permit is approved, or do they happen after? And if they have a draft permit that's approved after just 30 days, which is pretty short for some of the really big projects, and then there's a public comment period and a public hearing, do those public input, which I think is very important, can they actually change the outcome of the permit? Could if something was just found out in the public comment or public hearing that meant the permit should be denied, would that draft permit then be denied? So maybe, Mr. Smith, if you could explain to us, do you get a draft permit before the public input period of whatever form that takes now? And if so, then how does that draft permit get decided sort of through the public comment period? And then maybe if Representative Fabian, if you could help me understand, if something gets discovered in the public comment period, because, you know, frankly, I think that's what the purpose of the public comment hearing and the period and public hearings are, would that draft permit potentially not be approved after that hearing? I mean, the public input isn't just, you know, window dressing. It's an essential part of the process for these really big projects. And so I'm just curious how you see draft permit, public input. Could that draft permit then be denied or approved? And where in the legislation is that process spelled out? Because right now I don't see how a draft permit could not be approved. So there's sort of two questions there. How does it work now for Mr. Smith? And how does you see the public comment period actually impacting a draft permit being either denied or approved?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, this language does not at all in any way, shape, or form circumvent the public participation process. This is essentially, I'm probably going to oversimplify this, it takes the drafting of a permit out of the hands of the PCA staff. It's done by a consultant paid by the industry or by the permittee. They would submit to us a draft permit along with the draft application, which is a little sideways. Usually we get the application that describes what the project is, and then we begin the drafting process that leads us to a permit. These are coming in together based on the project proposer's consultant, professional, making a decision about what complete means. That would be submitted to the agency for a review. We would get final say on whether it complies with state and federal regulation. And then we're obligated to put that draft permit out on public notice to receive public comments. If it's appropriate, we'll also have a public meeting or a few public meetings. And then if it's appropriate, we may also have a hearing before our citizens board. So again, this process doesn't get in the way of that public participation process at all. Absolutely, part of a big chunk of this of the permitting process is to collect comments from the public, hear concerns, and amend the permit, the draft permit, to address those concerns. So we could see substantial changes to a draft permit through the public participation process.
Representative,
and that place is still there.
Representative Canute.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to general comment that I believe we're headed toward making this what's perceived to be the problem in permit efficiency. We're headed the way we are right now, making it worse. And I'm struggling with what can be done to make it better. And I'm all for efficiency, but you know what we've done over the last number of years and. Our efforts to cut budgets, etc. We're poised to make things worse if this as it stands. And I just want to make that comment because it's troubling. We're trying to make some progress here. I think everybody would like to see some progress, but my golly, we're we're putting quite a burden on folks, and as one who's been on the other side of that fence and reviewed a lot of documents myself, and Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your comment about we don't want to be naive about what the private sector can do. Well, let's don't be naive about what they can do. I agree. And there's quite a few things that you can receive in a document from the private sector that can lead you down a road that you don't even know where you're going, and how are you going to figure out the veracity of what's on a piece of paper? It takes a lot of time. So this is troubling. I think it needs some work, and I can't support it as it is right now.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I'm looking at Section 9 of the bill. I'm wondering why you felt the necessity of affirming the somewhat questionable principle of corporate personhood.
Representative Fabian or Mr. Quillett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty. That's also addressed in the E5 amendment, too, isn't it?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, could you point me again? Did you say Section 9?
Yeah. I did. It's Section 9.
And the definition of
Representative Hilty. Yeah. You got it? Mr. Quillis, page 6. Line 623 to 627, definition of a person.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
I'm
Quillis.
Going to guess, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I'm going to guess that we have picked that up from other references in statute. I could get back to you and define that, but I'm assuming that we've, Ms. Taylor might be able to help us out too, but I'm assuming we've just went through and picked that up from other definitions and statutes of person.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was thinking maybe they
Representative Hill.
Picked that up in consultation with Mitt Romney or something.
Additional comment,
seems
Representative
kind of
Hill.
Strange.
You're fine.
To put this in this section, I think there are definitions in law of what constitutes a person that are somewhat questionable at the present time. People are beginning to question, for instance, the Citizens United ruling and the whole idea of corporate personhood, and we seem to be just affirming that at this point. I don't know that it would really be necessary.
Thank you. Representative Fabian, you want to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion on delete all DE2 amendment or DE2 amendment to for approval.
It's to move the bill to the Jobs Committee. House File 2095. Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, has a roll call been requested on the
yes,
bill?
Yes, Representative Lucchini requested a roll call. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Beard?
Aye.
Dill?
Pass.
Druskowski?
Yes.
Fabian?
Yes.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Yes.
Hancock?
Yes.
Hanson?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell?
No.
Quam?
See.
Scott?
Yes.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Wagenius.
No. There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed and on to, as amended, and on to Jobs Committee. Next, Representative Wagenius, we better do your bill here first before we get into whipping through the rest of House File 2153. Members, we're going to hear informational hearing on House File 1644, Representative Wagenius's bill on water surcharge and aquatic plant management fees. So, Representative Wagenius, do you want to do it from there, or do you want to do it from there? Okay. Why doesn't the DNR, who's going to, Mr. Meyer, or Mr. Hirsch, Director Hirsch, who's ever going to talk about the aquatic fees? Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I think the fundamental thing that we have got to do here is, first, before we discuss the dollar, the particular fees, is we've got to discuss what it is that we together agree on we want DNR to do with regard to invasive species. I don't think we have that set out yet. Once we can come to, we can hear what DNR is proposing, we can discuss it. Once we have something in mind that we would like DNR to do, then I think we ask DNR to give us a dollar amount that will cost and give us several options about how to pay for it. I just don't think we're ready to say this fee or that fee at this point because I'm not sure what we're going to buy. And I think we all, it's the best process is for us to agree what we want to buy for Minnesotans.
And that's a good point, Representative Wagenius. We have had a short presentation from DNR on the long-range cost of the AIS fee. And if I remember right, it works with your bill. It's all the numbers are in a per-boat annual fee is the way I think DNR looked at it. They compared how much we would need to charge per the boats licensed by state of Minnesota residents to do possible different scenarios. And granted, I want to make sure people know we had requested DNR to do this very quickly, and they certainly are subject to interpretation change, and it's a fluid thing as we find out the cost of the deal with zebra mussel is a lot different if there's additional lakes involved, and the red-blue scenario and all that is different. So, yes, good point. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the public input here, the public clearly wants us to do more, and I am not sure how much more we can do cost-effectively. And I don't think we have an agreement with the public yet about how we can actually, the goal right now of DNR is to slow invasive species down. I think we have to say, what are we going to do? What is this? The time that we're going to buy, are we going to get other things done? And I'm obviously hoping we get to understand our invasives better so we can control them. But we don't have that plan yet. And there is this question of are we going to slow them down for how long, at what rate? And that implies then that some people are going to be infected by zebra mussels, some carp are going to come if we're just slowing things down. So I think we have to have a pretty frank discussion about this.
Well, thank you, Representative Wagenius. Director, if you want to identify yourself, and if you could quickly remind the committee what the bill says and how the fee structure is in the bill, and what level in the long-range scenario you would be able to fund with those fees. That gives us a basis to start. And if you do that, then maybe it would be beneficial if we spent the rest of the time see what public thoughts are involved on that scenario that you lay out that would be funded under Representative Wagenius's bill. Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Steve Hirsch, Director of the Division of Ecological and Water Resources for DNR. And I'll just kind of go through the highlights as the chair and Representative Wagenius pointed out. We talked about some of this when we went through the long-term funding report. But the invasive species account has been our primary fund to fund aquatic invasive species programs. And the revenues from that right now currently come from the watercraft license and non-resident fishing license surcharges. The watercraft license surcharge is currently $5 or about $1.66 a year because it's a three-year license and it hasn't changed since 1993. The other thing to know very quickly about the invasive species account is it does have a structural deficit, which means that the base appropriation exceeds the annual revenue. And we did get a transfer of $750,000 a year from the water recreation account each year into the current biennium and for the out years. But even with that, It looks to me, although I haven't seen an exact fund statement going out this far, but if you look at the numbers, it looks like the fund would go into the negative in fiscal year 2017. So in the in Representative Wagenius's bill, the proposed increases were this is the increase now above the current $5 charge. So a $5 increase for canoes for $10 total, a $15 increase for boats under 17 feet for a $20 total, and then a $20 increase for all other watercraft for a $25 total, and then also a $3 increase for the non-resident fishing license surcharge for a $5 total. And this would allow additional expenditures of about $4 million a year. Now, the current budget that we have this biennium, we got a pretty good dose of one-time funding, so that we got an additional $3.7 million actually in the current fiscal year, but we'll actually get an additional $5.1 million, so over $1 million more than what this current proposal would bring in for the next fiscal year. And so what we talked about when we went over the long-range funding report, and what the chair referred to earlier, is that in order to keep our program at its current level right now with the funding that we'll see in next fiscal year, we would actually need an additional $6.4 million a year in annual revenue as opposed to the $4 million that this current proposal would bring in. And then if general fund, current general fund appropriation and the water recreation account transfer were maintained. Now, if we get cuts in the general fund or if we don't maintain that water recreation account transfer, then we need to bring in even more with the surcharges. And then the only other, well, and maybe just to give you a rough idea then, if general fund funding went away and we stopped the watercraft recreation account, the water recreation account transfer, we would need to bring in roughly an average cost of $10 a year from the watercraft license surcharge as opposed to the $1.66 a year we're getting now, just to give you a rough idea. And then the only other thing I wanted to point out, and then I can take any questions, is that one thing to keep in mind about all this doesn't cover really any of the Asian carp costs that we've been talking about quite a bit over the last month or so. We did use a little bit of the existing funding for the Asian carp point person that we've got on board and some of the eDNA work, the environmental DNA work that we've done. But all the stuff we've been talking about, the research needs, additional monitoring, and of course the barrier work and the operation of those barriers, none of that would be covered by any of these dollar amounts in the Representative Wagenius's bill. So I'll conclude there and answer any questions.
Director Hirsch, I want to make sure that people understand when you talked about $5 additional for the canoes, $15 additional for boats, and $20 additional for boats, that's actually 3 years, if I have that right. So if we take somebody that owns a 23-foot boat, it would be, would that be in the $20? Is that right at the range? So it would be 20. You're looking at $7 per year. Would they be the $20 range? So if we took somebody with a 23-foot runabout or wakeboard boat or whatever, this would be $7 increase per year for them.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. All those figures that I quoted would be for the total surcharge cost, which is a 3-year cost. So the annual cost you could divide by 3, it would be roughly a little less than $7 a year. Correct.
In Representative Wagenius's bill, what is the proposed charge or increase for people that have boat lifts in lakes?
Mr. Chairman, that's not in the bill. We wouldn't be charging. This would not include us right now, anyways. A surcharge. We don't have that surcharge for boat lifts.
And how much would we charge for people that have docks in lakes?
Mr. Chairman, it's the same as with boat lifts. That would not be a charge.
So the only way those people currently are paying is through the general fund payment that's made, and there's challenges on finding ways to charge those people. Would that be a true statement?
Mr. Chairman, yes, except that I would qualify that probably most of the people that have docks and boat lifts probably have watercraft, so they're probably paying that way with the surcharge.
Well, so boat lifts are used for boats.
Correct.
Thank you. questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, I just renewed my canoe licenses, and looking at the application.
Good thing you got it in on time, Representative Hansen.
Got a deal.
You got it in before Representative Wagenius's bill. Sorry to interrupt. Representative Hansen.
And I was thinking, you know, when we increase fees, what do the people who buy those products get back? And looking at applications, thinking, why can't we ask for email or a Facebook or a Twitter account for people so that Minnesotans could opt in to get information when that the DNR could send out to a list? I mean, most of us have email lists. Most of us are on Facebook. We have Minnesotans could sign up to get information when there's an alert, or let's say when a carp is caught. I think we've taken action in making data private in the past, but looking at actually having something where Minnesotans, as they increase their fees, they can get direct information about aquatic invasive species, maybe the latest research, things that could be done. I know it would take time. You probably have to have a person managing that data, but has the department looked at that in terms of having direct contact with people who are buying the licenses or buying these boat fees?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We have looked at that. And the major problem is that data rectification, and then is that data public or private? There's a bill in the House and the Senate this year to make all of our electronic and license system data public again, which right now it's all private, so then all of those emails would be able to be purchased if that bill goes into effect. We have a different system that we utilize. It's called our government delivery system. On our front page of our website, you can sign up for any kind of updates on hunting, fishing. We can certainly do one on aquatic invasive species. I have one on legislative updates that I send out. There's about 4,000 people that get that when I send those out. So I recognize the question and the concerns we have. We're just trying to deal with it a little bit differently, where the user would manage their data, and perhaps we need to publicize that in a little bit more and use that a little bit more extensively.
Representative Hanson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, I would hope to keep that data private, but I think that when you have that, having run a licensing system, when you have that data, when you have somebody applying for the for a requirement, whether it's for a canoe or whether it's for a larger boat or for a dock, you have that person seeking the privilege. And if they had an easy opt-in, Facebook, Twitter, email, you would probably have more than 4,000 people that are going to be getting, that would be seeking the information, rather than the direct hunt and find where to sign up. And I think that may be, we want all Minnesotans to be involved in this effort against aquatic invasive species. And this would be something that I think we could build in, trying to make sure we have the protection for private data. And it could help out on the awareness side of it and on overall winning this battle.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are going into the dollar amount, and I think we do need to have some more discussion on what we buy. And if we go with this or something on this water, maybe not these exact fees, but something on this water bringing in this amount of money, then what's the rate that our lakes will be infected with zebra mussels? What's the rate that we will spread? Just give me a couple of other invasives, because the emails I get back on this fee, and I don't mind getting emails back, but my lake isn't going to be protected. And folks are angry about the fee because they don't think that their lake is going to be protected. So let's just talk a little bit about what rate of infection will we have for various things, and maybe we should actually even get a chart from you guys on that.
Director Hirsch, do you have the answers for that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, it would be difficult, probably impossible, to actually provide a quantitative rate of infestation based on the amount of effort we put in, because there's so many variables, and then, you know, it's a situation where the more lakes that are infested, the more likely, you know, the higher the probability that we're going to spread, because we just have more repositories of these things. And for years, we've actually kept kept the spread of Eurasian water milfoil fairly constant. The number of lakes, new lakes that get infested every year has been, you know, in the neighborhood of 8, 10, maybe 12, which doesn't sound very good, but it's actually somewhat of a success because you would actually expect that rate to go up. So to me, that's an indication that we have more awareness. It's still not good that we get new lakes every year, but it's really, I don't think we would ever be able to come up with a legitimate, you know, credible estimate of what the infestation rate is. What we can say, though, is that, you know, with the current level of funding that we've got now, I think we can describe the programs that we have in place now. You know, the number of hours of enforcement, you know, the amount of inspection activity that we have, how much we're able to grant to local units of government, how much we're able to do for information and education awareness, and then we can look at what we've been getting for infestation under that sort of strategy and probably assume that it's going to be similar, maybe a little bit better as awareness increases, but probably not dramatically different if we continue on with the same strategy.
Representative Wagenius.
I think when I discuss this with folks, they're not interested in inputs, hours that you work. I mean, we're interested in that, but I don't think when I talk to constituents, that's what they're interested in. They're interested in outcomes. So maybe the best thing that you could give to our share with us, because we won't be voting on this today, is, you know, what has happened in the past for zebra mussels, milfoil, et cetera. So we have a chart, and we can see the trend lines for each of these things. Because we're not talking about doing anything dramatically different. That's my understanding. This is more of a, we're not thinking about drama. And I think there might be other interesting things that we can do. I mean, Representative Hansen talked about one thing that we could possibly do. I think we have to be open for some other things that we can do. When I go to the doctor's office, I was just in the dentist's office. Hate to do that, but you have to sign. Do you understand all this stuff? And this was for a chip and a filling. I was trying to sign. When we ask people to apply for licenses, do we ask them to sign and say, I understand that if I move my boat from Lake A to B, I have to get clean it off? Have we thought about doing that kind of thing?
Representative Wagenius, that will be some of the discussion in House File 2153. There are some additional new requirements for folks when they re-register their boats and trailers along those lines. Director Hirsch, I would like to ask if there's anyone in the audience that is here today that would like to speak to House File 2150, I'm sorry, to House File 1644, the boats surcharge AIS fee that doesn't normally come here and would be back. Okay, I see a lot of familiar faces interested in this issue in the audience, but they're normally here. But I do want to offer a chance. Anybody here that we still have a few minutes? Representative Wagenius, you have the floor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just am interested in hearing from other members about things that we can do besides just raise the fee and what outcomes we can expect from perhaps other actions, because I don't think folks are satisfied with this steady as you go that we're going right now.
Well, Representative Wagenius, I've heard from members that are in the path we're going down this summer is not steady as you go. There will be boat checks, car checks, people seeing all kinds of flashing lights and MnDOT trucks and highway patrol and water patrols pulling all the cars with boats off to the side of the road and going into a rest area or whatever and looking over those boats, something that we have not seen in this state ever before as we take this issue serious. There's going to be a multiplying of 7, 8, 9, 10 times the number of contamination facilities that can move from boat landing to boat landing. So folks that think this is business as usual. It may not be as far as some of us would like to go. It may be way farther than others of us want us to go. So those are the discussions. Representative McGinnis, you still have the floor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is just the kind of discussion we need to have. We will be doing more, but relative to the problem and relative to the number of lakes, and that's, I think that's the issue that I hear when folks email me back. It's about, is it really going to have an impact on my lake? And that's the question I can't answer. I mean, I wish I could, and I don't think we can, and I don't think you can, but I think we need to, instead of talking about how many more inspections we're going to have, what our expected outcomes from these inspections will be, and are there other strategies that we ought to be employing? Because, well, you know, there's a lot of discussion in the public level.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your point, Representative Wagenius, as I emphasized last week in committee, I think one of the most important things we can do is to allow for as much involvement locally as is possible. You talk about your lake. I'm sure there's all kinds of people across Minnesota that care about their lake. And what I think we need to do is to empower those people to have some authority to tackle some of these problems from the local level. You know, we talk about the land of 10,000 or 15,000 lakes, whatever it is, and those people who live right there on the battlefront, you might say, probably have a lot of energy. They probably have a lot of resources available to them, and a lot of these things can be tackled best at that level rather than having the state not being able to do as effective a job simply because of resources and things that are available to them.
Representative Hansen, and then Representative Hancock, and if we have time, Representative Wagenius. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, we have some models out there in state government that have deal with, say, a chemical spill. Representative Torkelson or Anderson or the chair, when we did pesticide certification, on the back of your card it had the 800 number to call if there was a spill. And we've had training on a response, incident response. We have the duty officer, we have an incident response team that comes out to a spill and try to contain that. That's what we're dealing with. Invasive species is essentially a biological spill. We have an incident that occurs where you have an infestation. Is there a model there where we have with dealing with chemical spills? With the, I mean, could folks call the duty officer if there was a infestation that occurred? Is there a team that would respond and try to contain? I mean, we have 20 or 30 years of dealing with this on the terrestrial side. What about applying that model to the aquatic? In terms of dealing to an introduction, let's say the first snakehead that comes into Minnesota, how do we respond to that? Is there a model there that we can use?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we maybe could learn from some of the models with chemical spills, but I would also say that the introduction of invasive species is a different beast. Oftentimes the introductions that we find have already occurred, and the horse is long out of the barn. The two zebra mussel infestations we found last year in Rose and Irene Lakes, where we think, although we're not sure, that we caught them early, those are really the exceptions to the rule. And we did have a very similar response, and we cordoned off the area. We first surveyed to try to determine the limits of the infestation, we cordoned off the area, and we nuked it. And when we have a chance, we had a similar thing that happened a few years ago in Powderhorn Lake in Minneapolis, where we found Brazilian Elodea and actually were able to isolate it, treat it with chemicals, and then had the lake drawn down that winter to enhance winter kill, and we think that we got it, but most of the time we find it and it's already been there for several years and it's already too far along, and so it's not quite as dramatic as a chemical spill. But we do have that in our plans, in the invasive species planning that we've done. We talk about how we respond to those sorts of things, and it's possible we could borrow from some of the model with chemical spills.
Thank you. Representative Hancock, you have the last question. And I have Representative Anderson on the list, and Representative Wagenius, I think, was on the list. We'll start with you two tomorrow. We're going to have House File 2153 back before us, and included in that is the AIS stuff, so it'll be logical to have those discussions. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hirsch, and hopefully I can get the question out. I had mentioned the other day about citations. And I don't need an answer here, but I think it would be helpful if we had a breakdown of those citations, what they were for. What I'm really driving at here is the increased enforcement mainly beneficial in terms of raising money, or does it really have an effect that it actually reduces the amount of traffic of the invasive species? We were talking about the infraction rates and being 18% and 19%, and I don't know that. I think it was actually 19% when there were far more citations than there were warnings. And in conjunction with that, not only the states that have been relatively successful, but I come from Michigan originally, and they've had problems with zebra mussels and other invasives in Wisconsin, and this is not a new phenomenon. Have we looked at, I'm sorry, folks, have we looked at what other states have done in terms of how their enforcement of their regulations, has that shown a pattern of improved just awareness on the public, or has it actually increased their ability to control the invasive species? And that's sort of, excuse me, Representative Wagenius, in line with you. I think more information that we can have, we don't have time to reinvent everything here. If we can gather the information that's worked in other places, would be a great benefit, I think.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. And Director Hirsch, when you come tomorrow, Mr. Meyer, I think it would be helpful if Lieutenant Colonel Smith came or was able, or Director Conrad, if one of those two, and certainly Lieutenant Colonel Smith would be adequate. Representative Anderson, do you want to just frame if you had a question in case it's some additional information we need for tomorrow, because we will be back tomorrow, and if it's something to elaborate of information you need, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, no, it's just more of a general question. I can certainly wait until tomorrow.
Okay. Members, with that, we're adjourned.